You're listening to Rattigan's Rockcast, a series focused on talking about music from the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, and even current. Now, here's your host, Tom Rattigan.
What is going on, guys? Welcome to Rattigan's Rockcast. I am, of course, your host, Tom Rattigan. Thank you for being on. I really appreciate it. Whether it's on Castos, Anchor, YouTube, WMYO, I'm glad you are on. So, for today's episode, we're talking about Beatles for Sale. So, we had Please Please Me with the Beatles in A Hard Day's Night. Now, A Hard Day's Night was an album that, you know, definitely changed what they were doing beforehand, because, you know, they had original material that was all them. It was there. They were at a point where they didn't need songs from anybody else. So what do they do with this album? They do a bunch of covers and other songs too. See, I'm not a huge fan of this album. And, you know, it's not, of course, the most highlighted album. George Martin even says that it was not their best work looking back at it. As an album, in a sense, there are some great songs on it. Now, listen, it's hard to say, like, you know, there's really no bad Beatles song, in a sense. It's hard to say that, really, like, to find a bad. I mean, there are songs that, you know, I love more than the others, but there's no really bad Beatles song, in my opinion, I guess. Of course, there could be, by default, like, I remember, like, my favorite YouTuber, JT Curtis, talks about Beatles songs by default, because that's really how it is. When you're a Beatles fan, it's like, what Beatles song was bad? Really? It's like, yeah. But anyway, so to talk about, you know, what they did for Beatles for Sale, this was basically in the height of their fame. They were already on, Ed Sullivan at this point. They were touring Rock Around the Clock like crazy, just that's how crazy it was, you know. They were just, they were all over the place. They were the biggest stars, yet they needed an album. It was time to make an album. So this is what I would call a record obligation, because they needed to do some covers. So they basically, you know, pulled out stuff that they were doing when they were playing in the Cavern and in Germany and playing their favorite songs from stuff from, like, Little Richard's Kansas City, Chuck Berry's Rock and Roll Music, Buddy Holly's Words of Love, Carl Perkins songs like Everybody's Trying to Be My Baby and Honey Don't. But they are able to have original material on this album. They are able to have songs that actually were, you know, elevating in their career and all that. Like songs like that open the album that John has that are really, when you listen to the titles, sound dark in a sense. I'll just, like, list them now. The three songs that open the album. So, No Reply, I'm a Loser, and Babies in Black. So let's go to, let's talk about No Reply. So No Reply is more of a darker type of, you know, romantic song. Just, you know, if it, you know, like, these songs kind of deal more with rejection or more of just, you know, feeling like a failure. But the harmony between John and Paul on that is good. John's has more of a soother voice on it, like, you know, a little bit raspy, like, this happened once before, but I came to your door. That's my attempt of a John Lennon impression for this song. The guitar work, I am stumbling like a fool today. It's okay. The guitar work on this album works pretty well. The instrumentation, I actually will say, the one good thing, a good positive thing I will say about this album is I think, their instrumentation is at its peak here too. You know, you can tell that they are just, you know, working well on this. Especially I Am a Loser, the harmonica and the guitar, how they both correlate with each other. Then when you go into a song like Babies in Black, you know, that's the thing too. John and Paul have a lot of songs where they sing together. And like this would be something like I'm a Loser or Babies in Black, you know, in a sense. Those were their harmonies for that. You know, they work for that those songs. Babies in Black is actually, some people believe that John was writing it about this friend of theirs who was a photographer, and she was involved with the bassist, who was the guy who was John Lennon's best friend, who wasn't really a musician, but when they went to Hamburg, he played with them. He wasn't really, but you know, John just had him in the band because, you know, he was his friend and all that stuff. And people think it's about her, and I'm blanking on the name, and it's Asher Kirshner. Yeah. She actually died a year ago actually. She was a photographer, and she ended up falling in love with Stuart Sutcliffe, and he decided not to come back to England with them. And he decided to stay in Germany until his death, at a very young age, at the age of 21, after dying of a brain hemorrhage. This death took a real big toll on John, considering that was his best friend at the time. So some people think it was about, like, him loving her in a sense. Who knows? I don't think that's what it is. I think people read into that a little too much. So then we've got the covers on the album. What I guess I'll say about that is, like, yeah, so you got rock and roll, you got Kansas City and all that fun stuff, but I think, honestly, it's just, it's too poppy. It's not like, it's like, they come out with this great album, A Hard Day's Night, with all original material, that song's like, If I Fell, I Should Have Known Better, and I Love Her, and they're doing an album with covers that, you know, like, they were already established musicians, and they're going back to the 50s route, which, listen, I love 50s music. We're going to be talking about that on the show, too, so, but the thing is, I think it's just, like, it was sort of like when I listened to this album, because, like, my personal experience with this album was finding it at, like, it was the last, actually, Beatles album I ever listened to, because I noticed I never listened to that album before, and I wanted to check it out. And when I listened to it, I was sort of disappointed. I thought, like, you know, like, it was like, I didn't, you know, like, it was just like, I didn't love it, you know? And I thought I would love it. It didn't give me the same reaction as it gave me to other albums that of theirs that I love. I think the thing about it, too, is that, another thing I didn't like is, you know, that, like, you know, I mean, George, like I said, I love when George has songs on the album. He only has one song, and that's in the last song on the album. And it's not even an original. It's a Carl Perkins cover. It's Everybody's Trying to Be My Baby. That is, you know, a little bit of, you know, a disappointment for me in that sense. But let's talk a little bit more about some other songs that highlight this album. And we'll focus on the originals, but I do want to focus on one cover that actually, at the time as a kid, I thought was actually an original that they wrote. Because it's a different type of cover, it's a different type of song, and that's Mr. Moonlight. Mr. Moonlight, I think, is an interesting song because it focuses on, I think Mr. Moonlight, because it's just the way John just screeches out with a voice, and just, like, you know, how he pours out his soul. And I remember hearing it and getting scared. I was like, that's John Lennon? Like, because he just sounds so different in that. And then the beat is very, very a sad beat. George plays an African drum on it. And, you know, John and Paul's harmonies on it are, you know, work well too. It's definitely has this emotional sadness to the song, which I think is, you know, is helps in with the story as well. But I didn't like it as a kid. I didn't because I was scared of it, or not because I thought, like, I couldn't listen to it, but, like, it was just that, like, I just thought it was silly. It was just like, but as I get older, I'm like, wow, this is actually really, you know, interesting. This is really, you know, this is really prolific. And in some ways, you know, thinking about it, it's like, it's not one of their other, you know, original covers that they would do. It's almost like Till There Was You, how they went outside the box. They didn't just, you know, stick to rock or Motown songs, you know. They went into a different type of thing, you know. And this, you know, Mr. Moonlight is one of those songs that's just brings this great quality to it. You know, the way, I mean, like, yeah, like the way Paul sings, like, harmony on it, the way John goes on it, it's just like, it's a song that just works well. And, you know, I mean, I remember because I did think it sounded like a song that could have been theirs, and it, you know, I think it was released in 62, so they were already, you know, around at that point. So yeah, it was released in 62, and it was written by Roy Lee Johnson. So you know, it's not, yeah, and the person that did it was Dr. Feelgood and the Interns, and, you know, I didn't really know them that much. I didn't listen to the version at one point to see what it was, all the fuss was about, but, you know, of course, the Beatles version was something, you know, maybe it's more of what I was used to, but, you know, but like I said, it's not a song that I think so highly of. Let's talk about a song that was actually one of the big hits on the album, and that is 8 Days a Week. And 8 Days a Week, of course, is, you know, one of their most catchy songs. I remember, like, any time I listen to it, like, that's a song I bought my head to. That was a song every time in the car. That was the one song I was like, I have to sing along to this song. It's just, you know, and an interesting thing about it was because there was the documentary that came out a few years ago about the Beatles with Ringo and, you know, and Ringo and Paul and Ron, because Ron Howard directed the film, and Ringo and Paul were in an interview, and Paul talks about how the song came about, how he was, you know, I think it was like he was having, like, you know, I think he had to get his license taken away because I think he was, you know, I think driving drunk or something like that. So he had a driver and all that stuff, and he asked him how he was doing. He's like, hey, working 8 days a week. And, you know, he was going to John's house, and he was like, that's the song, you know. It's like, let's make something out of that. And they did and all that, and, you know, it works well, you know, 8 days a week, because sometimes when you work or just when you feel like this stuff, you know, it's, you know, it's, you feel like you, like, there's another day, you know, 8 days, you know, it's a good saying, you know, 8 days a week, yeah. So, I will talk about, so, I mean, like, I'm not a huge fan of, like, the Buddy Holly cover that they do of Words of Love. You know, I'm a huge Buddy Holly fan. I like the original version of Words of Love. I just think, you know, it's like I said, it was like, It was more of a disappointment that they did, you know, cover a lot of covers. And it was cool that they did a Buddy Holly song in ways, because, you know, they never did a Buddy Holly cover on an album. And because considering Buddy Holly was, like, one of their biggest influences, it was Elvis and Buddy Holly. Because, like, Buddy Holly basically influenced the name of, you know, having their band Buddy Holly and the Crickets. And, you know, that's how, you know, they came with, like, the Beatles and all that, you know. And I remember hearing that Buddy Holly's drummer Jerry Allison was saying, when they were looking up names of insects, they were like, we could have stopped at Beatles, but we kept moving along when they were looking, because they were looking at definitions of insects, because they thought that was a good name for a band. But yeah, no, so but, you know, John sings this song, yeah, with Paul on it too, of course, but I think it works well with John singing, you know, too, you know. I think because, you know, John, you know, considering Buddy Holly was John's favorite artist, you know, and all that stuff, whenever you hear a Buddy Holly song that the Beatles play, you always think John's gonna do it, because, you know, in some ways, John, I feel like, in some ways, you know, similar to Buddy Holly in his style of, you know, a voice, in a sense, or just, you know, songwriting style too, you know. So yeah, I will say that. Then coming at, you know, so we'll talk about the cover of Honey Don't, which was Ringo Starr's song that he did on the album. And, you know, at the time, it was one of my favorite Ringo songs, I think. And I think, you know, because I've always loved when Ringo does a song, you know, I'm glad that he had a song on this album, because he didn't have a song on Hard Day's Night. So it was really awesome to hear him have a song on this album. You know, sings it pretty good, you know. What I love about this too is the instrumentation on it. it too, of course, because it was your typical lineup of like John on rhythm guitar, George on lead, Paul on bass, and Ringo on drums. That was that original lineup, and that's on that record. That's the one thing too, you know, because it's like how we talk about the instrumentation with it being a cover album. It just shows you these were their positions. These are what they are good at. They are all in sync playing, you know? There's not other musicians. They don't have, like, what a lot of other artists at the time, like the Wrecking Crew or session musicians playing. They were their own musicians. Even rock groups had these session musician players. Not the Beatles. They were, you know, they played the instruments, which is what a band should be at times, you know? In all that sense, you know? Like, you know, like, and it just shows that that's what they can be. They could just be four guys playing in a group. Small amount of number, that's all you need, you know? So that's what I like about that. And so let's talk about a few of the original songs on the album. So we have one song that was actually recycled, because like I said, there was a lot of songs that were some that were covers, but there was one song that they actually like that reappeared, which was "I'll Follow the Sun," which was a song that there's actually a recording of it of them doing it when they were still the Quarrymen, because Paul wrote the song when he was 16, and the story was that he was sick and he was feeling bad and he just wrote that song and stuff like that. And so yeah, so you could tell. I mean, there's not that much there. It's not like it's like you could tell that like he wrote it at a young age. It's not so. I mean, there's nothing that much there. It's never been one of my favorites. When I listened to the album, I was like, eh. Like, I remember it was one of those songs. It was like, eh, what's next, you know? But a song that I do love on this album is Every Little Thing. When I hear this song, I always think, I remember one time I was with my father and we were in a restaurant and that song came on. And that's like another underrated song. And the way they both John and Paul sing on that, it just works so well. For instance, the opening line, definitely has some Everly Brothers vibes. Definitely has an homage to the 50s quality. And then there's the other song that I really am not a fan of at all. This is probably like my least favorite on the album, and it's "I Don't Want to Spoil the Party." That's like one song I'm just like, nah, I kind of feel it's silly. I just feel like the lyrics don't work well. The one song that we will talk about that is another song that I'm like, I'm not, too fond of, but what works is the drumming that Ringo does on this song. So the beat, so it's called, it's even got a Corey Tylus, what you doing. And, for instance, it's a great, it definitely has like catchy lyrics. It definitely has some, cool instrumentation on it. Ringo has this really like heavy drum solo in the beginning, like this drum beat. And Ringo was not somebody who liked drum solos. He was not somebody who wanted it. John, Paul, and George wanted him to do drum solos. He didn't want that, but he does this great drum opener, and that opens up the song. And George plays the song on a 12-string lead guitar, and there's harmony vocals from John George on this, but Paul does it well. Paul does the song great. There's backing vocals on this, but I think Paul sings it well. I think it's just what I don't like about it is I just think the lyrics are just corny for me. I just think it's just like I don't know. It's just like it doesn't do it for me for some reason. And the last song, which was "Everybody's Trying to Be My Baby," which I think is a fun song that George does. Like I said, it really disappointed me that George didn't have any really other song on the album, and waited till the end, and it was just a cover. But it works well. Like I said, a lot of their covers were similar to the other artists and all that stuff. Like I said that before, in the other editions. But, I think it works well, honestly. you know, that they do that, you know, like, they're not, you know, doing anything different. They're not, you know, they're, you know, they're being true to that, to the actual music and just playing a song that they love, you know? So that's what I think is so cool about that, part and aspect of it. I think, you know, George sings a good song. I think he plays a good guitar riff. I mean, any song that George does a good guitar solo on, even like Honey Don't, and I like, you know, the talk where Ringo's like, oh, come on, George, rock for Ringo, you know? like it just showed, like, George was just a great guitarist, too, in that sense. And in the early days, it was easy to show that, too, you know? And, you know, especially at that time, because before, you know, other musicians reemerged, like, you know, emerging on stuff, you know, George was kind of overlooked as a guitarist, you know, because then you had Clapton, Hendrix, and all that. And is George, you know, the greatest guitarist? No, I mean, but George definitely is, no, I would say George is definitely a good guitarist, and, you know, definitely, you know, could play some really great riffs and all that. And that's probably something I should maybe, you know, have talk about one time, my favorite George Harrison riff. That's something I got to think of, that I will mention probably as we explore and dive down into more of the Beatles albums. So one more thing I like to close out this thing is, so what I believe this word that describes this album is a record, is that this is a record obligation. This is what describes the album. It's, you know, it's you know, that's kind of how it is, you know. It's nothing new, in a sense, and you could tell that they were just, you know, having it, and they were just like, you know, they had some songs they wrote, and they're just like, we need to obey the contract and all that, so let's just put out this album. And, you know, I think the title works well, Beatles for Sale. It's like a tongue-in-cheek title, you know, all that, just of, you know, they were, because they were just, whatchamacallit, you know, they were, the height of Beatlemania for them all at this time was just crazy. And, you know, of course they dreamed for success and all this stuff. They, I think in some ways, didn't understand or realize what could the consequences be when you're a public figure. And, you know, when, you know, I think it was like they felt that in the sense that the public, you know, could take advantage of them and felt like, you know, it's like, well, it's like we're on for sale, you know? So that's what I feel like, that's what, that why the title works. I think it's a funny title. So I think that is an interesting title, Beatles for Sale, you know? That is my take for this episode. Thank you guys. Like I say, like I plug in, Digital Music Association at SUNY Oswego. We have our programs on Tuesday. This is for people who are listening to WMYO. I appreciate everybody else who's listening on YouTube, who are watching on YouTube, listening on Anchor, and listening on Castos and all that. So, yeah. Woo! All right. Got all that out of the way. Thank you, guys, and have a great, great day, weekend, night, or whenever you're watching this or listening. Bye!